My name is David Paulson. I'm a member of the Society for American Baseball Research. Today is February 6, 2000. I'm in the home of Chuck Hinton in Washington, D.C. We will be sending a copy of this tape to the Hall of Fame, but Saber reserves the right to distribute the tape or transcriptions of the interview to other researchers. Is that okay with you?
That's fine with me.
Okay. How old are you?
I am now 66.
Okay, good. And where were you born?
Rocky Mountain, North Carolina, May 3rd, 1934.
You know who else was born in Rocky Mountain?
Yeah, Bug Leonard.
Bug Leonard, right.
Yeah. He lived on the block from me.
Yeah. Was he in the funeral business by any chance?
No, he was not in the funeral business. But his wife was a school teacher and Buck was, of course, a ball player. That was it. Until he came back and started working with kids, and, you know, teenagers and things.
Did you know him? Do you have any conversations? Or do you...
Yes, I did. I had a few conversations with Buck, particularly after he retired, sort of, and sort of settled in. Thing like that. He used to come up for events and things, and you know, used to talk to him.
Is he still living?
No. Bug died a couple of years ago.
Okay. Were you brought up in Rocky Mountain?
Right.
And how did you get interested in baseball?
Well, baseball was the sport, of course, early on, and as a real young man, and when Jackie signed. And of course the Dodgers was my team, and I used to listen to it on radio and things like that.
You were a teenager.
I was a teenager, and I was in high school, and baseball being the sport, I mean, you played football and basketball in season, because season didn't carry over like they do now, but then you always play baseball. You can always find somebody choosing up, or playing, or whatever, and that you don't see anymore.
And what position did you play?
Dave, I tell you, I played all of them. But I guess I had more fun catching. I signed as a catcher. When I went to a tryout here in Griffith Stadium. And, you know, I was in college at the time. And I came up for a tryout. And I was a little stronger catcher. Used to really love catching because he had command of the game. You know,
knowing every pitch.
He knew every pitch. He called every pitch. He set up the batter, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I went to service and came back, and I was in the Orioles organization. And they said I hit too good and run too good to be a catcher. So they said the quickest way to the major leagues. You know, for me to go to the outfield or whatever. I said, well, whatever it takes to get to the big league, that's what I want.
So growing up, you were, I was favored the Dodgers because of Jackie Robinson.
Because of Jackie Robinson, I happened to see Josh Gibson, and he was one of my favorites, which goes out saying, and then, of course, Campanella was really a hero of mine. And because I was always fond of Jackie, that goes out saying, he was the very first. And, I had a chance to play golf with Jackie a little later on in the game. I truly enjoyed that.
Growing up, did any of the Negro teams come into Rocky Mountain?
Yeah, the Homestead Braves came to Rocky Mountain. Because Rocky Mountain, his step had his all-star team, which was called the All-Stars, and they were known also as the Black Swans. And baseball in the 40s and in the 50s, you know, it was big on every weekend. Every weekend, I tell you, they were just loaded because the whole playground was full of baseball. And I didn't live far from the ballpark, and I used to see every game.
How big a ballpark was it?
I guess it was seat about 1,000, and that was pretty big for the black people in those days.
In Rocky Mountain, not exactly. Right. Okay. I guess obviously you played high school baseball.
No, I didn't. Back, I went to high school in the ninth grade, and that was the last year that they played baseball in my high school, Booker T. Washington. Right. Well, what happened was I was just a little stronger kid. I mean, I didn't even weigh 100 pounds when I went to high school. And I was actually afraid to go out for the team, which I didn't because, you know, I was just so, I used to wear nipple pants. That's how small I was. I didn't weigh 100 pounds. I was, goodness gracious, I was terrible. But at any rate, I could play, but, and I went out and saw almost every game, particularly every home game. And they discontinued baseball, and so I had to play semi-pro, and, which I did.
And how did you get into organized baseball?
Well, I was in college, Shaw University in Raleigh, North Carolina, and...
Were you on a scholarship then?
I was a scholarship, basketball, football, and of course baseball. My athletic director was a baseball man, so I really went on a baseball scholarship, but I happened to play the other two sports. My brother was Ed Don before me, and he said that the athletic director really wanted me to come to school, and I said, well, I think it's a waste of time, but I'll go. But at any rate, I did go, and I read where they were having a tryout in Washington. And
what year was this?
This was 1956.
There was no Griffith Stadium.
Oh yeah, the Griffith Stadium, and oh man, I went there, and the Orioles told me to come over Monday morning.
Oh, they were conducting. They were using.
Well, Griffith Stadium. They had all major league teams represented in.
Oh,
in,
I see.
In the tryout, sponsored by the Daily News at that particular time.
Washington Daily News.
And I went over there, and about 1956, I was signed by the Orioles. And
remember who signed you?
John Polk Whaley. Because Polk has been dead now for about 15 years or so. But I was signed by the Orioles, and sort of came up in that system. And I was drafted. I came home after my first 2 months.
Had you finished college then, or you?
No. I was sophomore in college, but I was in a hardship because my father just died, and I was able to sign and play.
Right. Okay. So, what did your folks think about this? Were they pushing? You had been in college, and
they were just so elated. They were so elated. So was I, because my mother, as I said, my father died in 55, and I just sort of hung around in college, and being the oldest boy, I just felt obligated to really take care of her, and fortunately I was able to go and play baseball.
Okay. So you signed with the Orioles in 55, and then you went to Phoenix in 55.
Yeah, I went to Phoenix in 55, the Arizona-Mexico League in 55, and played the rest of the summer, which was about 2 months, and man, what a rude awakening that was. I mean, in the Pro Bowl, and, you know, I thought that...
What was that, Class D?
That was Class C. And, you know, it was such a joy. It was really such a joy.
What were some of the Mexican teams?
I remember Mexicali, Cananea, and that was... It was four other teams. Three other teams. I can't remember exactly who they were now, but I remember Mexicali and Cananea.
And you caught. I see you caught that.
I was a catcher.
You got 29
catcher.
Games.
In fact, I caught when our regular catcher got hurt, and I was a catcher. And when he was ready to come back, he put me in outfield. So I had the next experience in outfield and came home, got married, and was drafted in the service.
Okay.
Man, everything happened in 56 for me. I signed, I played, I came back, I got married, and I was drafted in the service.
Were you in the Army?
In the Army. Army for 2 years.
Okay, and did you play ball in the Army?
Oh, yes, that's all I did.
Were you in this country?
All the time. Stateside all the time.
You just got a little more training then.
Got a lot more training, and... played against major league players.
Who were some of the players you were?
Well, Tom Chaney, Steve Korchak, right, Don
Steve
Budding.
Steve Korchak, right.
Did you?
Yeah, we went to the same class. He should have stayed stuck with football. He was drafted by the 49ers. He was like second or third team All-American. He was maybe GW, one of GW's best players. But he picked baseball as a catcher and he just hasn't panned out, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. He was a big man. Eli Gerber was also a Fort McPherson during that time. John Wyatt, Earl Wilson, who served together and played. So,
I guess it was a come down in salary too, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, the strange thing, Dave, was that when I got out of service and went to my first spring training, really, and I was with the Orioles and the course line.
I hear you. No, that's okay. Thanks.
So I went spring training in Gainesville, Georgia, and I mean, what a rude awakening that was. Goodness gracious, to see those kids go home time and time again, I tell you.
When you signed with the Orioles, did you get a bonus by any chance?
I got a $500 bonus if I made the team.
Was that sort of standard at that time, effectively?
Well, it was, and I was happy. I was elated. I tell you, man, I would have paid them if I could. But, of course, I signed for $500 bonus and, like, $200 a month I got.
Now, after you got out of the service in 1959, you went with Aberdeen.
Right. With Earl Weaver.
Northern League.
Right, Northern
League. Was that Class C or was that
higher?
That was Class C. And Earl Weaver was the manager there?
Earl Weaver was the manager.
Oh, your first experience.
First experience, man. What a year that was.
And that must have been one of his first...
It was the second team, I think. And, Earl was kicked out about 30 ball games, I guess. I mean, you know, it came as some kind of show. Just seeing. But he was quite a baseball man.
Now, you really had a great year that year. You led the league in hits with 178, and you hit 358.
Yeah, yeah.
And you played out.
We looked at a year and all that. But and then that winter was the first year of the instructional league. And I went down to Florida. And instructional league, my son was born October 31st. I was still in Florida in the instructional league. And he was a month old really before I saw him. So, but I tell you, it was such a joy. And then after that, I went to spring training with the Orioles in the minor league to Miami. Miami was the AAA team. And that was quite an experience. But anyway, before opening season, I was traded. I was sent to Vancouver.
That was AAA.
Which also had a working agreement with the Orioles. And
were you still part of the property of the Orioles?
Property of the Orioles, right. Well, I didn't have no clue where Vancouver or British Columbia.
They didn't say Canada. They said Vancouver. I think there's a Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah, well, I don't think so. I think it's all British Columbia. Yeah, anyway, right. It's Canada. And anyway, man, I had a time. I went there and got off to a fairly decent year, but they said they wanted to send me to Stockton so I could play every day and, you know, do what I did. Yeah.
Had a good year in Stockton, 369.
Well, I led the league again, yeah. But they were supposed to call me back, and they haven't called me yet. I guess I'm still waiting.
Now, Stockton was not AAA, though, I guess.
They were Class C again.
Back to Class C.
Yeah, but they were sending me where I could play every day, and they were going to supposedly call me back up.
Now, that year, you didn't do any catching at all. With Stockton, you played first base, third base, and the outfield.
Right.
So you were, I guess, a fairly decent infielder, too.
Yeah.
Okay. And the next year, you went to Indianapolis back.
I was drafted by the Senators. That's when the expansion came.
The expansion, right.
I was drafted by the Senators.
Do you remember what position? I mean, were you the first draft choice, or where you were in the draft?
I was in the draft, but I have no clue as to what number I was. I don't even know that.
Okay. And you hit 316 with them. And then I guess they brought you up later in the year.
They brought me up in May of 61.
Now, at that time they were probably playing at RFK, weren't they?
No, Griffith Stadium. It was the last year at Griffith Stadium.
Okay. Do you remember your first Big League game.
Do I remember it? I remember everything about it. I was so cool, Dave. I was so cool. I always pride myself in being cool, calm, and collected. And of course, Washington, where I signed from, and I lived in Washington, and had quite a few friends and everything. So, and knew the guys that had gone to spring training and everything. Anyway, I was called up, and Mickey Vernon was the manager. And of course, he said, "You know, you starting in left field and you're hitting third." I said, "Thank you, no problem." When I got to bat, we found Boston. Right. We found a doubleheader. I was shaking so much that I stepped out of the batter box and I thought, had a little talk with myself.
This would have been the first inning, right?
It's the first inning. I was batting third. And I could not stop shaking. And I was not nervous, but my body reaction was that, man, they haven't shaken. I said, "This is a virus." Come on, man. You know, grab a little dirt and look down for signs and did all the things that I could do.
Is this opening day, by the way?
No. See, I was brought up in May.
Oh, right.
Okay. And so I couldn't stop shaking. So I just stepped in the box and swung at the first thing I saw. And, I popped up, ground out or something. And this happened two times. The second time I was doing it, Billy Muffet. And we played.
Billy Muffet now, wasn't that? Yeah. King's tennis player.
Muffet?
Did he play for Cincinnati, like, or not, San Francisco Muffet? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was Billie Jean King's brother.
Right.
Anyway, Billy Muffet.
At any rate, the third time up, I stopped shaking, and I was so angry with myself for shaking, but I couldn't do anything about it. At any rate, I got a single.
Good, your first hit. That's
333. Oh, man, I'm so...
Did you get the ball? Did they give you the ball, or they didn't do it?
So they didn't think about the ball, I don't think. Anyway, I didn't either. I was just so happy. I'm on first base, and they threw over 8 straight times. I'm going like,
you got a reputation, huh?
I'm going like, how in the world, what they doing? They don't know me, I just came up.
Maybe they do.
I would say I was a greenhorn. I mean, I didn't know about people scouting people and stuff like that. But anyway, I stole second base.
Right. Now, on that team, which unfortunately finished last.
Yeah, right.
10th out of 10. Dick Donovan was a pitcher on that
Dick
team.
Dick Donovan was a
and
pitcher.
And he led the league in ERA that year.
That's right. He,
for last place team.
He was, I tell you, man, he was really something else. He was all pitching the day that he pitched. He had to sit a certain place and no one wanted to talk to him. And I said, what is wrong with you? Some kind of nut or something. But, you know, that was that.
Now, 61 was the year the Mantle-Maris home run race.
Man, was it ever, yes.
Did you get any observations you could make?
Yes, I like to, yes, surely. Well, first of all, everybody was pulling for Mantle. Maris was, you know, had been with the Yankees, I guess, maybe 1 or 2 years, if that. But, you know, they were going nick and tuck for the championship. And of course, Mount got hurt. And then Maris just, I tell you, it was really something. To see that lineup was unbelievable. And also, Detroit had a heck of a year this year. Because Norm Cash led the league with 360-something. Colavito drove in something like 160 runs. I think we had about 10 pitchers with 20 wins. They had about 30 people hitting over 300. It was fantastic.
But I guess some of those homers were hit off center's pitcher.
Oh, well, a lot of them were hit. I tell you, man, I used to get in my position and just look. We wouldn't have to move. It was something else.
Okay. Now, next year, you really had a great year. It was probably your best year in the majors, huh?
It was my best year all around. And the strange thing about that year, I was in and out of the lineup the first of the year. And
injuries or?
No. That was just the way that they were doing it. I mean, Mickey and George Case was a very good coach, and he told me, they think about sending you to the minors. I said, for what? Well, you're not doing too good. I said, well, all you got to do is just tell Mickey to put me in the lineup for 1 week. I don't care who's pitching, 1 week, and I'll prove what I am. So I never got out of the lineup after that, but then I had my best year.
You're 310, and I think you're the last senator to ever hit 300.
Well, but the year before, Gene Woodland hit 300. So he was the first expansion guy to hit 300. I was only with the Senators for 4 years, but 2 years after that, and then of course they left after 7-1. So I'm the last 300 hitter.
That's right. I hope
we get a team
that
soon.
We won't be able to say that.
That's right. And somebody, whoever, well, I'm sure somebody hit 300. But at any rate, it's quite a feat. And I'm very, very proud of that fact, but still, you know, record of the
And not only that, you were third in the league in batting.
Fourth of them.
Third.
Was it?
Third,
Yeah.
And you were second in the league in stolen bases.
Oh, yeah.
So they must have known something when they were trying to pick
you. Well, they probably knew something. You know, the funny thing, too, Dave, I think I had 28 stolen bases. And, you know, you didn't run no any time. You know, Aparicio was leading the league primarily in stolen bases. I think that was maybe about 40
years.
Or something like that.
Yeah, he's led about 5 years in a row.
Right. He was the leader at that.
Now, that year, Jimmy Pearsall was on the team.
Yeah.
And obviously played center field. I
played left field, right field, and a little first base. And
Pearsall was the best fielder you saw?
Pearsall was very, very, very good. He, the funny thing is that he didn't have a whole lot of, blazing speed. But he was not fearful when it came around obstacles. Around fences, I've seen him hit fences. I mean, like they wasn't there, and I'm going like, oh my goodness.
Did they have padding in those days?
Man, they didn't have anything hardly. He was running to the fence in Washington and Cleveland. I saw him running to that little fence. The fence was only about 5 feet, no more. It wasn't even 6 feet tall. And he'd run there and put a dent in it, and his body was just like a slingshot come back off it. But anyway, he wanted the ball. He was a ball hawk. There was no question about that. And he was real good. He really was.
Of course, he had a reputation as being a sort of an unusual fellow. Did any instances?
There was quite a few. A couple of them I remember. I remember him going in the stands in Baltimore, going back and practice. Sometimes it was heckling, and of course it was enough to. You know, if you're already having problems, somebody call you cuckoo and something, so you go after them. Same thing happened in New York. But one funny thing, he got thrown out of the game in Minnesota before the game started. You know, when the umpires come up to get the lineup card, and he was on Salerno and Valentine was the umpires, and oh my goodness gracious, man, they just couldn't stand. They'd throw him out of, I mean, just looking at it. And he would call them, that's Salerno, you wop some, oh my goodness, that's all kind of names, and they threw him out before the game started. And we had to hold it back, man. It was amazing.
Now, you were probably played in a very historic game that year, the one that Tom Chaney pitched.
Oh, yes.
Want to tell us about that game?
Yes, indeed, I want to tell you. Tom, it was amazing because we went, 15 innings?
I think 16.
16 innings. I think he pitched every one of them. And I tell you, it was, he won. We finally won the game. It was either 1-2-1 or what. Anyway, we won the game. So, Tom had he had great stuff, in fact. I think the very next outing, I think he pitched like 5 innings, and then something happened.
He struck out, he played in Baltimore, didn't he?
In Baltimore, he struck out 21.
That's still the record for a game.
God, he was fantastic, man. They just couldn't hit him. And obviously, we didn't hit either. It was 16 innings before we could score, right?
The Baltimore pitcher, I guess, did he have more than one pitcher?
Oh, yeah. They pitched about, three or four pitches. I mean, at least, yeah. Yeah, it was quite adorable.
Do you remember how the winning run was scored?
I really have no clue. All I know is that we did win. I know that we won. In fact, we had the Nat. They had the Nat Fest, and that's coming up next week, I think.
Yeah.
Tom was here, and Gus Donald, a few other guys. But it was good to see.
Now, in the next year, 1963, you were second in stolen bases again.
Okay.
And you were second in triples.
I was having a really good year in September. I thought that I might be able to reach the 300 mark again. And that was when I was Bean.
Oh,
really? Yeah, I was Ralph Terry at Yankee Stadium. It was early September. And
they didn't have batting helmets.
Well, I had a liner. And they were just, helmets wasn't really mandatory, but, you know, I had a little liner and got hit right on the side of the head. And, and of course, I came back. 8 days later or whatever, and was seeing doubles and that sort of thing. So I ended up, you know, 280, I think it was, something like that. Yeah,
269, actually.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, this is the third year with Washington.
Right.
And the team finished last for 3 years.
Okay.
A little discouraging, isn't it? I mean...
Well, it was discouraging.
Was there any hope for...
There was hope, but see... During the expansion, during the first expansion, that was the first expansion, people would just put anybody on the up for the draft. I mean,
they put their worst player.
Their worst player by far. And you know, if you draft today, you can get some real good players to go without saying. Because today you don't have to worry about that, because you can also sign free agents. But we did not have a great deal. We did not have a farm system, first of all, the first year. And so if we signed somebody, we had to send them out to some, you know, someplace else. But anyway, we came up with a couple of players. Franklin was a pretty good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure stuff. Okay, in 1964, the team did finish ninth.
Oh, we
improvement.
We improved. We got a little stability. Got rid of some of the dead weight.
And you were fifth.
Eventually they got rid of me too.
And you were fifth in stolen bases that year.
Yeah.
So you're still one of the league leaders in stolen bases there. Now Chuck Osteen was the pitcher on that team.
Yeah,
Paul, he was the only one that was better than 500.
Yeah, okay.
Do you remember anything? I think he went on to become a Dodger.
It was a Dodger. He was traded. It was a big trade they made with the Dodgers that when they got Frank Howard. And of course Ken McMullen and Dave Nen and Pete Rickard and Phil Ortega. Wimpy, we used to call him. He was a very good left-handed pitcher, and he kept us in the game. Him, Stenhouse, and Donovan, and Bennett Daniels, we finally put some things together, a little pitching staff together, and we were able to win a few games, a few more games than we had previously.
Okay. Then, that was your last year with Washington. What happened?
Well, I was traded for Bob Chance and Woody Hale. And they, you know, Bob Chance was a rookie and he had hit real well for Cleveland. And Woody Hale was a utility man that could do a lot of things. He had a lot of power. And what happened, I don't know. I don't know what happened. But I went to Cleveland and I enjoyed it.
Who was the manager of Cleveland?
Bertie Tebbit.
The catcher.
Yeah.
Well,
he was a good baseball man, he sure was.
Okay, now Cleveland finished fifth, so you were getting up in the first division now.
Oh man, I tell you, you know,
you're winning a few games.
We were winning some games, and they wanted me to play a little second base, and I tried that. And
played first base,
you know,
first base,
and
third base too. As well.
Third base, and I even played a little shortstop and a little this and that, but We had a lot of players, we really did, and of course, 65 was a good year. In fact, I had more homers that year than I had previously, 18 I think it was.
18, right.
So, and I'm really, you know, not a home run hitter, but
Was it Cleveland because of the configuration that did that help a little? You probably played Municipal Stadium at that time.
We played Municipal Stadium. And
a lot of empty seats, though.
A lot of empty seats. But I tell you, the people were just, they really loved the Indians. They really did. And they were not like Washington fans. Washington fans, as far as I was concerned, the greatest fans that there was. Because they didn't know anything about winning. They just knew about participating. And for 75 years almost, I think they had
one World Championship.
And they were faithful. They were really faithful. And if there was any kind of a glow or anything, you know, they were always, you know, for years they outdrew Baltimore, and Baltimore was winning tennis.
Yeah.
It was just amazing that people here was really something else. And of course, to have that, see Cleveland Municipal Stadium full was a sight to behold, too. That happened every once in a while, yeah. Especially opening day.
About 70-some thousand people.
Yeah, it was just a cool people. And they used to have what they call a grandstand manager's night. And it used to be over 65,000. That was almost full.
Now, you played with Rocky Colavito in the outfield.
Played with Rocky. And Joe Adcock, who was the manager for 1 year, had going to have me replace Rocky. And I'm going, oh my goodness, how is that? You know, I got booed, he got booed, and it was just unbelievable because Rocky was all the time one of the all-time favorites of Cleveland.
He had 108 runs batted in that year.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he led the league, but he was way up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his fielding average was 1,000. Perfect.
No question. He could, man, he had a right arm. Great what an arm he had.
And Sam McDowell was on that team. That guy
McDowell, Louis Tiart was on that team, Gary Bell. Yeah, we had Sonny Steven. We had a conglomerate of players. We didn't have a strong infield. But we had outfielders, Wag and Davalio and Colavito, myself. But catcher, I would say average. But as far as the infield was concerned, Fred Whitfield, Larry Brown, Dick Houser, Mac Alvis, we couldn't compete with the Yankees or Baltimore or White Sox or Minnesota.
Okay, so you were with Cleveland for 3 years altogether, 66 and 67 as well, and you hit around 255, 256.
Mm-hmm.
And played mostly outfield, I guess, huh?
Played outfield. In fact, at Cleveland, I played every position but pitch. I played all eight positions at Cleveland. In fact, I even caught like 3 or 4 games straight, and oh my goodness. Boy, did that hurt my legs, my knees and things. But anyway,
were you pretty good at throwing out runners or keeping runners on base?
I had a pretty decent arm, so I could get rid of the ball pretty quickly and things. So, you know, I wasn't exactly one of the greatest catchers there was, but I thought I was. It's always important to believe in yourself.
Now, 57 was your last year with Cleveland. You went to California, right?
Well, I went to California, traded to Cleveland, and of course, the very next spring, I was traded back to Cleveland.
California, we're back on the West Coast again, and Jim Fregosi was on that team.
Right, Fregosi. Did
he exhibit any kind of leadership that that would indicate he might be a manager later in the year?
Well, not really, because Jim was a young player, he and Bobby Knopf,
who also was a manager.
Rick Reithart, yes, Bill Rigney. Bill Rigney was a manager. And, you know, we had talent, but the, you know, pitching being what it was, I think that Dean Chance was a really, really good pitcher out there for
the area. I think he won the Cy Young year.
Yeah. But, you know, other than that, we had some young arms and the Mr. Smith, I remember Clyde Wright, a lot of young arms, but not a whole lot of and a whole lot of consistency.
Okay, so you were there just 1 year with California, and then Cleveland got you back again.
Back to Cleveland.
What was the trade on that? Who to give up?
To go out there, I was Jose Carnell. And then I was traded back to Cleveland for Lou Johnson. Yeah. So I was back at Cleveland, and I enjoyed that for 3 more years.
Right. Now, Ken Harrelson was a member of that team.
Ken Harrelson.
Was he wearing a batting glove? He's the one supposedly who started the
batting
glove.
Well, he was one of the guys, because he was quite a golfer. And yes, he did. He was one of the few people that had batting gloves, had golf gloves, really. It wasn't batting gloves, it was golf gloves, and he used to, you know, he played that thing, man, you know, let's try it. And of course, in Cleveland, you needed anything you can get with the wind coming off that Lake Erie, I tell you, it was really cold.
Now, Alvin Dark was the manager, right?
Alvin was the manager, Bert Tepper at first, Strickland was the manager for a little bit, interim manager for a little while. Adcock for 1 year, and then Alvin.
And was Cleveland still about the same, as far as the standings, still around that day?
They always had, you know, the amazing thing about Cleveland that we always had good personnel. I can remember in 66, in fact, when Frank Robinson went over to build Frank from Cincinnati. And Cleveland, we started off 10-0. Baltimore was 9-1. They won everything in 66. Yeah. We still finished second or third, I think. But, you know, it was one of the greatest times that we had in Cleveland. Yeah. And I think we managed to finish third, fourth, couple of times, something like that. But that's...
Now, 1970 in Cleveland, certainly a fine year. Your highest batting average, .318.
Yeah, in and out and round and things.
107 games.
107 games, played everywhere.
Yeah.
Just
outfield, infield, and catcher.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that certainly was one reason we kept you around here, because you could play all these positions.
Well, Dave, you know, the amazing thing was I used to just toy with those positions. Just like, you know, I would ask if I could go out and take infield. Yeah, I would ask if could I go and warm up a catcher? Could I, you know, just so I kept busy. Now I'll always get somebody's opinion, especially one of the coaches, whatever, you know, as to how to do this and how to do that. And it just paid off. Just being into the game, and of course it helped me a lot a little later on too, because in playing almost all those positions, I became a pretty good coach, I think.
What kind of salary were you getting these days?
Oh my goodness, my highest salary was $25,000, and I thought I was rich.
Probably were.
Well, I wasn't rich, but it was bad.
Was that towards the end, was that with Cleveland?
That was with Cleveland. Mm-hmm. That was with Cleveland. In fact, when I hit the 318, in fact, I got, I think, around $2,000 or $3,000 raise. My biggest raise was because of Washington after I hit the 310. I was making 12, and then I was then 20 went to 25.
These contracts were just for 1 year.
Yeah, yeah. It was just
so really depending on what you did, you know.
What you did is what you got. And in fact, I remember Drysdale and Koufax. I think it was 66. They held out for $80,000 apiece of them.
That's right, they got together.
Unbelievable. Koufax and Drysdale were not making $100,000. Just go say I was making $25,000. So I was not one of the top, but you know, very few guys, I think Mountain Mays and a few other guys were just making $100,000.
Is it fair to say that Ron Klein was one of your favorite pitchers to hit off of?
Ron. It's safe to say. I hit my first home run off Ryan, and hit my only grand slam home run.
Right, good
off.
For you. I had that down here.
Yeah,
okay. Do you remember the background on that first home run in the major league?
I remember it because we were playing at Wrigley Field in L.A. This was before they went to Chavez Ravine, you know, with the Dodgers. The Dodgers allowed the Angels to play in that park. It was at Wrigley Field. And Klein was the pitcher. And I actually hit my first home run. And I tell you, man, it was quite a thrill, quite a thrill. And then we became teammates. And he said, oh, man, I gave you my first home run. You didn't give me anything.
By the way, you realize that you hit home runs off of four future Hall of Fame pitchers?
Four?
Four future Hall of Fame pitchers. Can you name any? Either one?
Well, now let me see. I think I might have hit one off Jim Palmer. I think.
Right. Okay, that's one of them. Robin Roberts.
Robin Roberts. Oh my goodness! You absolutely. Right.
Whitey Ford.
Oh my goodness! Don't forget Mr. Ford.
And you hit three off of Jim Bunning.
You know the amazing thing about Bunning? I thought the man was going to knock my brain out because he had a reputation. But to my knowledge, he never really threw at anybody. Pearsall used to holler and scream at him from the dugout, on deck, and at bat. And he never got one ball thrown at him. I guess Bunning could get him out easy, so he didn't buy it. Why would he waste,
living here in Washington, ever run into him? He was a senator now.
No, he is, right. But the last time I saw Jim, down at the Touchdown Club or something like that, everyone went, no, you don't run into, those guys are real, they're working. I tell you, that's what they're doing. They're on their heels. It's no joke. And we went to a golf tournament together, I think. We went up Milwaukee, up to a golf tournament. But that's about it.
What was your biggest thrill in baseball?
Oh, wow. Dave, I tried to make every day a good day. I was so happy and so proud to be a Major League Baseball player that, to me, every day was great, man. Accomplishment like my first hit, you don't forget your first hit, your first home run, your first grand slam, or games that you walk off the field with a home run or a base hit or something like that. You don't forget that. But the one thing that I never forgot was that the people paid to see you play. And not just you, but everybody. And always took that into consideration. I might not felt my best, but I always tried to do my best. And just being a major leaguer to me was an everyday event. I mean, it's showtime. I mean, come on, let's go. The people paid, and they come to see what you got. And of course, you got to challenge that pitch out there, and et cetera. But they paid, so let's give them a show.
Now, 71 was your last year, and it was with Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened after that? I mean, how did they drop you, or you decided to retire?
Well, no, nobody retired from baseball. Nobody retired. They retire you. They say you lost a step or two, and hey, man, that's it. So they send you your papers and so I was working off season with teenager and hardcore kids in the Department of Recreation. So in Washington. So I became a full-time recreator. And doing that and being here at Washington, I learned that they needed a coach at Howard University. And I inquired about the job, and they hired me right away. And I did that, for 28 years. Did both things for 28 years. And the day I turned 65, I said, okay, see you later. They said, what at? I said, no, that's it. I'm gone.
How'd your team do?
We did wonderful. We won more conference championships than anybody in the league right now, but which was seven. In fact, it was funny because my very first year, the guy that was Dr. McKnight was the coach at Howard, and he had done a masterful job in recruiting. And you don't win with just anything. But anyway. I walked in and we had quite a team and we won the first year we won the team.
Right. Other than that first year, did you personally do recruiting?
No. After that, I had to go out and I didn't. Being working for it, I was a part-time coach at Parsons, supposedly, but it took up so much time. And the Department of Recreation, they allowed me to do that, and I'm very grateful. and proud of the fact that they did. But as far as the tutoring thing is concerned, I had to go out several times during the course of the summer. But in order to coach the team, I had to use leave every time we played or every time we went on the road. So I had to work during all holidays. I had to work in order to acquire these.
In the winter too.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun though. But anyway, I had some good teams and we did some good things.
Any players on your team make it to the majors?
Yeah, well, surely Milt Thompson made it to the majors, and Milt had quite a career, really. He played in I think two World Series and did real well. And I went to Phillies and the Cardinals did really well. Jerry Davis made it to the major league and he hurt his knee, and I think he was the year that the Padres went to the series, he was not making it well. Yeah, yeah. And I have numerous some 20 guys or more that played in the minor league. In fact, there's a couple of kids playing in the minor league now that I coach at Howard. So
they may make it.
They might. I truly hope so. It is so tough today, though, I tell you. It is so tough because they don't have that many places to send people, and the net. Most teams used to have anywhere from 7 to 8 to 10 minor league clubs. Today they don't have a 3.
Yeah,
maybe
they have
4.
C and D. They have a lot of D's.
Right. Well, see, now they had a lot of that. Well, the Yankees, for instance, there were three associations in AAA, and they had 3 AAA teams.
Yeah, they had one in each league.
In each league. So did the Dodgers. You know, those two people with money. But
I think the Senators, they didn't have any. Their top was Chattanooga.
Right.
Double A.
Right. Right, so it's amazing. So you don't have a lot of places to send kids today. So consequently, kids, man, you go and you get a cup of coffee. That's really what it is. And when they say there's not enough talent, that's not true. There's plenty of baseball talent. All you got to do is look at the draft. Each year they draft 60 kids. Now that's ridiculous. Why would you draft 60 kids? You say, well, you can put them all over. Yeah, but how about the kids you already got signed? You know? So they'll take 12 shortstops to rookie league, for instance. How you gonna play 12 shortstops in 2 months? I mean, how you mean you just, okay, you go in, you make one error, you gone. And that can happen to anybody. I tell you, a lot of kids are really looked over today, and it's really sad. It's really sad, but you know, there's just not a lot of room. It's not a lot of room. And of course, the expenses today, I think kids in the minor league make make $1,000 or more. You know, I made $200. They make those, they get paid.
When you played, did you have any problem with umpires?
No, indeed, never. I was never ejected from a game. Never, never. In fact, I was ejected from one game in college. And that was really funny. But at any rate, I always knew that the umpires made a decision, and I've never seen them change the decision yet. So you're arguing in vain. I mean, I don't care what, you know, they have the last word.
Right.
So that to me, that just didn't make sense. There was some pitchers umpire and the hitters umpire. And of course, you had to know the difference. If there's a pitcher umpire, he might call the ball 6 inches off the plate. Hey.
They do it today.
They did it in my day. They did it, you know. You got the hitters on fire. Sometimes pitchers can throw the ball right down the middle of the plate. He'll play ball. I tell you, it's really amazing. But, you know, that's just the way it is. You got the hitters on fire and you got pitchers on fire. So, you know, if you get the pitchers on fire, you better be swinging. There's no question. If it's anywhere near, you better be swinging. So that's just the way it is. But no, I never had trouble. I always got along real well with umpires.
And how's baseball different today than when you played?
I don't think there's any different, Dave. I really don't. People are just filling the ballpark. I think people are doing a great job promoting. Again, there's not a lot of places that a kid can go and get really good training. And they should be getting training at the major league, at the minor league level. And they got, in most cases, they got a coach for every position and a bench coach and everything in the major league. They do have some roving minor league instructors and things, but that's where they should be all the time. You know, in fact, if somebody going to instruct kids, and that's what the minor league is for, is to instruct kids. They got one manager and maybe one pitching coach. Where are the other people? That's where they need the people that are teaching people about the game, teaching kids how hit count. You know, you're ahead of the pitcher, you're ahead of the batter. You know, you don't have to throw him a strike. You're trying to throw him something that you want him to swing at, that's out of the strike zone. As long as you just throw a strike, you're going to get killed. That is what I'm saying. I don't care where you sit. See, so you got to learn how to finesse. But people should be in the minor league teaching these kids that. You know?
Do you keep in touch with any ex-players?
I see quite a few players in golf tournaments. I play golf. I was very instrumental in helping in setting up the Major League Baseball Alumni Association.
Oh, yeah.
And we have some 40, 50 tournaments a year. And
at the Sabre Convention, they usually have one.
Yeah.
They have it down in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Okay. So I get to see quite a few guys during the tournament. But as far as corresponding or anything, no, we don't very well do that.
I was thinking not too far from this golf, the Rock Creek
golf course. Oh, man, I used to be there every day. I used to go out every day, but now, see, I go across town over to Langston because I brought a kid from Immokalee, Florida to play baseball for me at Howard. He was a pitcher, and he's now general manager of the golf course. So it's like my country.
That's been around a long time, hasn't that, Langston?
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. They're dedicated to the historical site. Yeah. I don't think so. I don't think so. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun, a lot of reminiscing and this and that. But I do want to mention the fact that, of course, I have been married since 56, you know, to the same lady. And, of course, we have four kids and one grandson.
Any of the kids play ball? I mean,
no, I just have one boy and three daughters, and they don't play. My son, he played little high school and little bit of college. But it's been a great life.
You've been living here for?
Been living here for now for about 63.
In this house?
This house.
Yeah. Good location.
Yeah, good location, no question. Good location, right at the golf course.
66, right down the White House.
Yeah, right down the street. Just turn right on down the street. It's quiet, and the neighbors are, you know, really, really nice and things. So it's a good place.